둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
I had to write Verizon a stern letter. I think that's on me.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you, as always, for making your way here, for checking out the series. Hit that subscribe button, of course, so you can keep up with every episode that I put out every single week. New and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Three interviews every week to keep you up to date on your favorite artists and discover the new ones. You can, of course, grab us at Spotify, at Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget to give the series a rating, leave a review. Both help out so much. We've had some great guests on lately. Just did a rewind with Brandi Carlile. Ani DeFranco is here talking about her new record, as was Maya Hawk, who just released Chaos Angel. Caleb Followo, lead singer of Kings of Leon, dropped by. Actor Tadanobu Asano, he stars in Shogun on AMC. Carl Clemens Hopkins, starring as Marcus in Hacks on HBO. Joe Talbot from Idols, the cast of The Big Cigar on Apple TV+. Comedian Modi, Tom Bailey, lead singer of the Thompson Twins. And Joe Gatto of Impractical Jokers was also here as well. Just an example of what you can hear when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. And speaking of Impractical Jokers, I'm Kyle Meredith, and my guest today, Sal Volcano of Impractical Jokers. Sal's back with his very first stand-up special. It's called Terrified, and we're going to get into, well, really hearing about growing up and finding fear around every corner, especially in the way parents parented at the time, being afraid of ghosts and murderers in hotel rooms, and he's going to elaborate on a story that's in the special where he accidentally smokes hash in Amsterdam before a Rufus Wainwright concert. Sal's going to go on to recount the time he met and got an insult out of Don Rickles. How he ended up in a Curb Your Enthusiasm moment with Larry David inside of a cramped elevator. And we'll also get an update on Impractical Jokers, which currently is shooting its 11th season and has already been renewed for a 12th. All that and more, we're talking about Terrified. It's Kyle Meredith with Sal Volcano.
You got a cool setup over there. I'm just like in front of a closet door, but
half the people are just to make me feel cooler or...
No. I've seen it before. You usually have a Bowie over there, which is I don't see anymore. But
we got Ziggy Stardust Bowie.
Okay,
Bowie, but I did move a Bowie. You're right. I did move a Q.
It's not like I'm studying your back wall on other videos or anything. So.
That's it because I flipped the Depeche Mode and I had the REM. You're right. And yeah, I have two sets. The other one is I think it's more fun because I've got Prince on the wall, and
And half the reason the posters are there is just to talk about them. It's like, you know, it's like the icebreaker stuff. But having Prince, it's like every single time somebody's like, "Hey, it's Prince."
Yeah,
like the Prince amount of times that Prince and Depeche Bowie.
Depeche Mode, though, I'm trying to teach my nieces about Depeche Mode. Like, I don't think the younger kids really know about Depeche Mode. You know, like, and it's like they were so huge when I was like 12, 13, 14, 15, you know. Love the tape player, man. Is that Fonz? The Fonz, too?
Yeah, the Fonz and Slash, Ren and Stimpy. Yeah. This is Jose Gonzalez poking around.
You've inspired me. I need a better setup, man.
When you said that about the younger kids in Depeche Mode, like, the first thought that came to my head was David Gunn. You know, he's always wearing that leather, like almost all leathers, like a little leather vest. And it's like, I wonder how that really plays to the younger people. Like, because he's probably in his 60s at least now.
Yeah.
And still a bit of a leather daddy out there on stage. So it's.
Yeah. There are bands that always escaped me. I saw The Cure on this last run, which was, it was something. They were out there for over 2 hours. They definitely waited till the last six songs to play the biggest six hits.
Like he knows that he's doing that. I've seen him once and it was like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I like The Cure. And it was the same thing. I just remember going, okay, there they are.
You need the deep cuts. And I felt like, I felt bad because I felt like everybody there like seemed to be like know everything. And I was like, you know, I like The Cure like the next person. You know what I mean? Like, I like, you know, Depeche a little bit more. But I was like, all right. But the song's going to be very introspective, let's just call it.
Very drony.
Yeah,
very drony. Very booty. Yes. Very drony shitty.
Story, yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's so funny. I'm with my girlfriend and she likes him too, but she was tired. It was like a work night. And I kept promising her, because I had looked up a set list. You know, from like, and I'm like, oh, no, it's coming. And she's like, if it's not, if they don't stop playing it within the next two songs. And she was a good sport. We ended up staying till the end, but I felt really bad. I was like, come on.
There's a guy we still quote around the house. We were, my wife and I were watching The Who, and we're at a Who show, and they were playing the Quadrophenia album. And the tour was promoted as the Quadrophenia album, but this guy didn't get the memo. And he was completely hammered, redneck, you know, top tier stadium, you know, upper decks and everything, just like sloshed before song one. Like, he had been pre-gaming hard. And about three songs into it, because again, they're doing a full album, he starts this thing, play something I know, you know, drinks in the air. Half an hour later, he's getting mad. Play something, and finally he passes out. Just passed out. His wife left him there. Just left him.
Oh yeah, we've all seen that guy.
I do not want anything to do with this man anymore. And walks away. Just leaves him there, passed out in his seat. So that's our battle cry. Play something I know.
Play something. It's Freebird.
Dude, it is seriously a pleasure watching this new special, Terrified, and I honestly laughed my ass off. I have no ass.
Oh, thanks so much, man.
Yeah, it is so funny watching you do this. And by the way, and when I go back and you're a Kentucky Colonel, I'm here in Louisville. And so I have to bring that up. It's law that I have to bring that up, I think.
What do I do that? I don't know what I do for that.
I had Gatto on here recently. And
oh, really?
Knowing that he is also a Kentucky Colonel.
Yeah, we got colonelized together, if that's what how you call it.
Yeah, right.
I have the frame, you know, I have it, everything. I feel I'm also a reverend because I got my license to marry Joe and his wife. So I'm colonelized, reverendized. I have a bartender's certificate. I have all of it. I have all these certs.
Yeah. Now have you been back to Kentucky since it was colonelized? And like, how do you use it? What do you do? I'm not a colonel.
So, you know, I have not used it to my advantage yet there. I don't know what kind of weight it pulls, but now that you mention it, for certain, the next time I'm there, I'm going to find out. I've been there a handful of times since then. And I'm just going to like walk around with it in the frame. And is it fairly common? Or like, is every third person a colonel over there? If like you just were like,
I don't like, I know a few people. I have a few friends who are colonels, but I have many, many more friends who are not.
Okay.
And I honestly, I've just never looked it up to see like what the deal is. what I expect is it's sort of like, you know, after you graduate high school or college and you become alumni, and the only reason you're alumni is so they can ask you for money.
Sure. that old nugget, that old chestnut. I feel like I should like get like tax breaks, or maybe like just a discount in retail at least.
Sure. We have a 6% tax here in Kentucky, and that can be wiped away. That's
just flash the badge and be like, I won't be paying taxes for this.
Parking meters? No.
<That's>... Yeah. Just little things, just nice touches.
Yeah, you become like Wayne's World when they're backstage and the But seriously, so Terrified. So it's out of here. This is your first special, right? Like first special. Like you've been a part of like the Comedy Central things and everything. Why now? What was it? Why now? What happened?
For sure. Well, yeah. I mean, I did some televised stuff, some shorter bits in other pieces, but like, you know, I just never really like had the time to be able to put something like a full hour and like really, really, really work on it. You know, it's a good problem to have because I was lucky enough to have the good fortune of work all the time, you know, but I've been doing comedy for a really long time. And, you know, I don't just want to put the first things I write up as a special. I want it to mean something, you know. So, you know, it's probably about 10 years worth of material. And it's what I think was the thing that was, you know, the material that was speaking to me the most at the time of like formulating the special. Because I have a couple hours of material, you know, whatever. But it's like I wanted to package something together that kind of had a through line and like, you know, can be represented like as just a piece in and of itself. Whereas, you know, a lot of times I just would just like kind of tell really funny jokes and name it what have you. But I just felt like coming out of the gate for my first one, I just wanted to try and make it something that, you know, people could like, you know, just had a theme and had something that like would be more memorable. And I started to notice that a lot of my bits were fear-based. A lot of my stuff that I tell is a lot of stories mixed with observational stuff. You know, it's nothing really crazy blue or anything like that, but it's a lot of like personal stuff. And I started to realize that like there was this theme that just came to me. Like I'm just like looking at everything on a board and I'm like, oh, that is and I'm like, oh my God, I'm just an erotic anxious person. And these are all fear-based things. And I was like, and then I just got the idea. I'm like, I just had stumbled upon these old horror movie posters, like those old like 60s pop like horror movie posters, like Creature from the Black Lagoon and things like that. And I was like, oh, you know, that resonated. And I'm like, oh, I should call it Sal Volcano is Terrified. And then I used that as the kind of aesthetic we pulled from the Creature from the Black Lagoon. And you know, there's like little things like, you know, if you saw it, it opens up and the cold opening kind of is horror-ish. Mm-hmm. Which I thought was, I didn't necessarily know where that was going to go, but I ended up being happy with it because I feel like I kind of grip you for the beginning of a comedy special. It's kind of definitely unique. And yeah, I just want to make something memorable and something that was personal. And I'm just happy like that it came together because I was making this special before I knew if there was a theme and what was going to come out of it. And it's always a race against the clock to figure out like, you know, and then one day it just kind of hit me. I was like on the road over the weekend with my buddy, Chris. And, you know, these are long drive days and nights, like sometimes 3, 4, 7, 8 hours a day. Mm-hmm. So we'd like do a show or two and we'd drive into the next city for like 5 hours at like 3 a.m. and just talking about it. And I remember the moment we happened, I was like, it was the first, like, as soon as it hit me, I was like, I had no doubt that it would be that, you know, which doesn't happen with me a lot. I'm someone who overthinks myself into oblivion. And so it just felt really right. And finally, it's all together. It comes out May 31st. And, you know, I'm proud of it. I really am proud of it. You know, it's nerve-wracking to put a piece of work out there like that and just let it go and just see what comes back. But I think I pretty much stayed true to my voice and stuff. And I had fun doing it. So.
And we'll be right back right after this.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Save on your next oil change at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Choose Castrol Edge Full Synthetic Motor Oil to provide maximum performance and protection for your engine. Get a $15 gift card after rebate when you buy 5 quarts of Castrol Edge for $34.95. Plus, 2x O Rewards points. Offer valid in-store and online at O'ReillyAuto.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Auto Parts!
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Sal Vulcano.
Of course, I remember that when I was young, everything about growing up is being fear-based, and especially like I was a little Catholic boy, and there's all that that comes along. I was an altar boy, you know, and everything is fear-based. Like, I don't understand the people who weren't afraid. You know,
it's crazy.
Like, there are those people out there that seem to have had their, you know, their shit together growing up and were fine. And like, I just don't get it, because every single thing, as you point out,
everything is like, do this or be punished or fear this. So, you know, like, I'm trying to like undo that all now. Maybe my second special after all this therapy will have moved past that stuff. But no, yeah, it's so true. Like, even I think about it now, like, because it's so funny. I've been like, literally watching videos about this recently, because my sister just had a baby and my other niece had a baby, and there's a lot of young kids around. And so I've been watching these videos just about, like, you know, just how to raising kids differently these days, and like what we instill in them becomes their inner voice and stuff. It's just so funny, because we were talking about like how it permeated everything in our lives. Like, I remember my parents, my dad, I remember him saying, like, if you don't eat all your food, like, this is, and you think we thought of nothing of it then, but thinking about it now, we were laughing so hard, but it is insane. He would be like, so if you don't eat the vegetables, we're gonna have to take you to the hospital, get a needle. And we just like heard that. Like it was nothing. Like, oh, let me eat these, I guess. Let me shove these down through dry heaving, because otherwise we'll have to drive to the hospital. And I hate needles. And I guess, you know, they shoot the nutrients into me via needle, I guess. And I remember I had forgotten about that. I remember it. We laughed so hard that we had tears streaming down our face, because that is an insane thing to say.
And that's like, but, that's what, know, Grimm's fairy tales were all based, right? That was the whole thing. Like, we're just going to scare the crap out of these kids.
Yeah.
To be good people. What can go wrong?
Well, I think I got scared enough that I could say I'm a pretty good guy. But yeah, no, it's funny. And, you know, I guess they, you know, I don't know. Maybe there wasn't enough videos out there, and there wasn't YouTube for our parents to watch.
But, well, going through it, and then, you know, you get towards the end, and of course, I'm not going to give any of the jokes away, but you do see Rufus Wainwright.
Give away.
You see Rufus Wainwright, and I love Rufus. I've had Rufus on the show a lot of times. Rufus isn't in the special, I should say that, but there is this story about you seeing Rufus while just completely out of your minds.
I was I was in Amsterdam with my girlfriend a few years back, and we smoked what I thought was marijuana, which I didn't smoke at the time anyway, and it turned out to be hash, which I still really don't know what that is, but it's not marijuana, it's like marijuana squared. I don't really know what it is.
Sure, it's plus, everything's plus, apple plus.
Yeah. But it didn't take kindly to me. It wasn't funny for a long time. But I knew that, like, I was like, oh my God, at the end of the day, when things are happening as a comedian, when things are happening like that to you, you're like, at least I have something to bring to the stage. You know what I mean? So
how often does that happen? Like eventually you hope it becomes funny. Like, even in those moments, like, are you in those moments like, this sucks, maybe I can get something out of it?
Yeah, I probably wasn't thinking about comedy that night. Maybe just like maybe later on that week. But like, I didn't even tell the whole story in the special, because after we leave there, not to give anything away, but I ran out early because I just was kind of freaked out, and my girlfriend had to like kind of settle me. And we actually ended up going to eat something because she thought that would be a good idea. And we went into a restaurant nearby that was fairly completely empty. And we sat by the front in a window. And I was still so like anxious and fearful of everything, that, because in the theater, I thought people were going to try to kill me. And when we went to eat, I was convinced that the waiter was still going to kill me, actually. And this is, I mean, the God's honest truth. We sat there and I said, I don't trust this waiter. He keeps coming up like from behind and everything. And I swear to you, I held the butter knife. Every time he walked over, under the tablecloth, I was holding the butter knife in my hand. Because if he was going to do anything, I was going to just lather him up real nice with butter. she's like, just stop. I'm like, no, I don't trust him. She had to humor me, I guess, you know, so... But it was real. It was real. I really felt like this guy in a bow tie with like a maroon coat on was going to like do something to me. Yeah, that's the last time I'll ever smoke hash.
I worry about that because I don't smoke hash or anything, but I find these moments of natural paranoia. I don't know if you just get those anyway. Like we talk about growing up with the anxiety. Like there's one moment that we joke about too around here that, and this is sort of half, this is common enough to freak me out about being old eventually. Like who am I going to turn into? Because I walk downstairs and I open the fridge and there's just a jar of cherries just right there in the front. And I thought, we didn't buy a jar of cherries. Where did this jar of cherries come from? And then I start concocting this and no one's awake yet to say, I bought the jar of cherries. You just didn't see it. No one's awake. So I go through this whole thing. It's like, you know what? I bet our back door is right next to the fridge and probably some teenagers did a dare. Hey, put these cherries in this guy. Why in the hell would anyone do that? That's not a thing. That's not a thing kids do.
No, that's that. You extrapolated a few extra steps there.
That kind of paranoia, I don't need the drugs for. I will do that on my own anyway. That's
when I'm on the road and I'm in a, it's funny. I don't like think I believe in ghosts or anything, but like when I'm on the road in hotel rooms, sometimes if I'm feeling it that night or whatever, like I just feel weird to shut every light off. It just feels so vulnerable. So I will like leave the TV on and like, you know, sometimes I'll even just be like, I'll just look around, just feel like, you know, all right. I like literally check, like, I'm like, you know, whatever. Or when I like shower, I lock the door. I lock the door of the bathroom when I shower since I'm young. And I don't know why there is something in there. It's not logical, but it's like, well, if a murderer is here, there's at least some barrier to entry. You know what I mean? Like they might need to jiggle it. Maybe they hit it with an axe, but it's not going to be, I'm not going to be blindsided.
See, that sounds reasonable. That's not too paranoid right there. Like there could be a murder in the hotel.
Yeah.
More plausible than teenagers daring to put cherries in someone's fridge overnight.
More plausible, yeah.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Sal Volcano.
So the Jokers, you of course have got your tours that you all do.
Yeah.
Did you find that you had to figure out like who you were outside of the group on stage? Was that ever part of your process?
Well, I mean, it's part of the process in general, but it's not like I had to be like, all right, I know I'm the Joker guy. Who am I? Like, I mean, I started doing comedy, like, you know, around college time and stuff. So I'm an old fellow now. But what we do and stand up is two completely different things. And so they check different boxes for me creatively. Like, guys and I write, you know, like, and we write a show tailored to the fans that want to come see that. And it's a dynamic show. We're all involved in storytelling and this multimedia stuff and audience participation. Whereas, you know, my career as a stand-up, I actually don't speak of the show at all. I purposely fully separate it. So my show is just straight stand-up, just personal about my life. And just, you know, it's something like, you know, I didn't really like, as far as like putting out my first special at age 47, I think there's a benefit to that because, you know, part of the thing about being a stand-up is just, especially in the beginning, is what kind of who are you, what type of comic are you, you really only kind of hit your stride when you figure out, you know, what material matches your voice and those sync up. So I think I had a lot of, you know, years of that before this, so I kind of feel like pretty assured of who I am right now, and that is a terrified man.
Did you ever get to a point where you would like actually study comedy, like you know, specific comedians?
Yeah, I mean, I've been a comedy nerd, right? My entire life, like entire life. So as I guess like that is studying. I mean, I'm a laugher. Like I watch as a comic, a lot of times we'll look at comedy or we'll be in the back of the club and we'll say, oh, that's funny. You know, when another comedian makes a really, we're like, oh, that's funny. And you kind of think of it sometimes as like you think of the joke first, whatever. But I also, I laugh with my whole body, you know, and I've always been a laugher. And I'll laugh at my friend's jokes that I've seen them do 10 times, I'll still like hold my stomach and laugh. So I just love to laugh. And I've seen probably every single special, you know, there is. And I like have old comedy records I used to listen to with my grandpa and stuff. I have hundreds of old comedy records. So yeah, it's funny. I used to like watch so much. And now, well, at least during the process of making the special, I didn't watch all that much. I didn't really want to be anything else in my head or be influenced by other things or hear anybody else. I just kind of wanted to let everything marinate in my own head. So I kind of like didn't watch a lot of comedy when I was making it. once in a while. And then I would listen to somebody like my buddy Mike Vecchione, or like just like another comic that like I just hold in such high regard. And then I was like, oh man, I probably shouldn't have watched that, because also because they're just so good. It's just so good. And it's just like, you know, you never want to compare. I'd say comedy is for me like golf. Like, as long as I'm playing against myself and I'm improving, the second I compare myself to, like, you know, anyone else, it's like, oh, don't do that. Don't do that. You know? So it's kind of like a game against myself, you know? So, yeah, but it's good to be surrounded by so many, like, my friends are professional comedians, and that only helps, you know, like, it is pretty wild to have friends that are comedians and just laughing all the time.
Well, you got that picture at the end with you and Don Rickles too. That's, yes. Speaking of, you know, comedic legends, RIP. But how did you meet him? Like, is there a story behind that photo?
It's not a story, but I was lucky enough to play a venue that he was playing a couple of weeks later. I had already had the tickets. I've seen him like 3 times. He's like one of my idols in comedy. And my grandfather really reminded me of him. And he just like this, you know, beneath what he did, he was able to, like, there was no one he couldn't touch and everybody appreciated it. He had just that way about him. I mean, I don't need to tell anybody who Don Rickles is, but like, he just had this way that was like this undeniable way that he can speak to anybody about anything and say anything. And I mean, he could just, it didn't matter who you were, and you just cut the room in half, like just cut the anything. And so I just love that about him. I just love that about him. And that was even not even on stage, it was just him as a person. So anyway, I had played this place in Long Island and Westbury, it was in the Round, and I had already had my tickets to bring my dad and my girlfriend, and when I played there, I went to the staff and I was just like, I'm gonna be there in 2 weeks and you have to let me meet him. So the guy that had security was like, oh, no problem. So he came out as one of his, you know, it was in his later years. I mean, I think it was only 2-3 years later that he passed, and he sat through the show, but he played 2 hours and he had the big band and everything, and it ended, and we waited in our seats for like an hour. Because, you know, let him do his thing. And then finally he was like, oh, he can come see you. And at this point it was like after 11 p.m. There was no one in the facility, in the venue. And we went back and he was in the room with his wife and one other couple that were their friends. And he just like welcomed us in. And I was so like, I don't really care or get nervous about any, like, celebrity. It's not a big, like, you know, but there are certain people that are just bigger than life for me. So when I walked in, I told my girlfriend, like, please just record this on the phone. Like, even if we don't like record the whole thing, just me saying hello. And I had gotten this this huge, like, printed photo of him, like this, like a photo this big, but actually like a printed photo, hopes that he would sign it. And I walked in and I said, Mr. Rickles, it's so nice to meet you. This is my dad. And he goes, what the hell do I care about your father? You know? So immediately, you know, like, so we all left, you know, he didn't know I was a comic. He didn't know who I was. And so I told him, and then he just sat there for like 10, 15 minutes and gave me advice about comedy, about life, me and my girlfriend, just about advice to us as a couple, to someone who would be on the road a lot, and just advice about the stage. And then he signed it, and he said to Sal, to my pal Sal, I know you'll make it. I know you'll make it. Love you, Don. And that hangs in my living room right now. It's like, there's a fire. That's like one of the top three things I grab when I'm running out the door, you know?
But at least you also got that line about your dad at the beginning, because that's like smoking weed with Willie, right? Like, if you get the chance, you want him to insult you somehow.
He insulted me immediately. I have a few like that. I smoked weed with Weapon Man, which is like Willie.
That's like that, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Like, a few weeks ago, I was at the Knick game and I was in the elevator with Larry David, by chance, you know? And the elevator was like packed in. And he was like, him and Susie Essman were there, and they ran in and got in late as it was closing, and like squeezed in, and there wasn't a lot of room, and the doors closed, and it was like quiet and awkward because everyone's like, oh my God, it's Larry David. And he's like, thank you guys. I know that, you know, it's a tight squeeze. I appreciate it. And he was pushed right up against me. And I just like, I have to. So I was like, yeah, no, it's not like we really had a choice, you know? So I was like, it is what it is. You came.
You insert yourself into a Curb episode is what you just did.
I was like, I'm doing this. And he laughed, man. And then he turned around and said, well, I assure you, if it was the other way around, I wouldn't have let you in. And I was like, I did it. I got a Curb, a real life Curb.
Got it. Well done on all of that. I want to hit a couple things really quickly, because you got the two podcasts, Hey Babe and Taste Buds. and which are both fantastic in the different moods that you bring to both of those. And I just also find myself checking out your t-shirts every single time because it's always impressive, the collection of shirts that you seem to have.
Well, oh, that's so cool of you. Thanks, man. I take pride. I have this closet is my closet behind me, and I have, I'm embarrassed to say, probably like 500 t-shirts in there. I mean, I have t-shirts from when I was like literally like I have like 40-year-old t-shirts in there, but yeah, well, but
that's another level of your series anyway that is appreciated out in the world. So
thanks, man. Know, it's a point of pride for me. Thank you. I'm gonna send you something. I'll just pick one randomly and send it.
That's right. And then of course, you guys are what? Season 11 of Joker's coming up?
Yeah, 10 just finished airing. Season 11 begins July 11th. We're filming it now. I don't even know if they, I think the official like announcement is coming in the coming weeks, but we signed for 11 and 12.
No, it's out. That announcement's out.
Oh, yeah. It is. Yeah. Okay. Well, there it is. Yeah. So we've been filming that since January. I'm actually leaving to go film today, actually right after this. Yeah. So it's been a blast too. We're just having so much fun still. It's amazing that we're still having so much fun, but it just by nature, it's just a fun thing to do with your friends.
Sure. What's impressive, like 11 seasons of anything is impressive, but something like this, like how, like, do you ever, is that fear ever there anymore that like, well, we've ran out of ideas? Like that's because you guys, somehow you keep it fresh and every season is great and we laugh and somehow you're still surprising even each other, it seems, even though you probably know everyone's fears and everything, but yet... Like what is that? Like Larry David used to talk about that. Like before every season of Curb, he would just have like meltdowns. Like, oh my God, am I ever going to think of another idea again?
Exactly what we. It's the exact same thing. I remember at the season one was 16 episodes, and I remember I distinctly we talk about it all the time. At the end of 16, we didn't know if we were getting a second season, and I just told. I like remember specifically turning to the guys and be like, well. That was fun. Like, that's the end of that. Like, we did everything we can in this space. Like, we've literally turned over every rock. There's no more jokes to make. And now we're approaching 300 episodes. And every season we lock each other. We just get in a room with our writers and everything. And we just, like, we specifically say, like, how can this evolve? How can it change? Like a lot of times, the easiest way to describe the show to people is, oh, these guys, they tell each other what to say in an earpiece and they have to do and say what they're told. That really is only like a quarter of the show, maybe a third of the show. And then the other like two thirds is like 50 other things that we do. You know what I mean? But it just seems to be the simplest way to convey what we do. And yeah, that's just a testament to our team and everything. And just, you know, we also like wanted to stay fresh for us, obviously. So, and that's the fun part. The most fun part for me is the same thing with joke writing is, figuring out why it's funny or figuring out why something's going to work or it doesn't work or figuring out how to take this and make it different or better. And what is the specific minutia of why that's going to work? I had said it to you earlier, I'm an overthinker. And I guess like in this respect, it kind of is helpful to me because I like, that's the stuff that I really love to dig into. And that's the stuff that kind of you need to do to make this stuff work. I think that's why like the comedy, like this kind of thing resonates with me. So yeah, I mean, it's like we do freak out. I freak out, especially at the special comes out on May 31st and my tour. That's also the day my new tour goes on sale. The Everything's Fine tour. and I'm writing that now. And it's like every 2 years when I have to write a new, you know, hour, or we write a new hour, it's like so nerve-wracking, but because it goes on sale before the product is possibly done. And I always end up at the doctor with like shooting pains in my chest and head, and they give me a CAT scan every 2 years and they just go stress. And it's always when I'm trying to write the new season or the new hour and that pressure is on. But you know, as someone with ADHD and everything, like I work well under like pressure and deadlines and stuff. So the same thing that is so difficult is the thing that is the part that I really love about it.
You know? What is it? That's the balance of, if you know, laughter is the best medicine and will possibly extend your life. If you know, there's a lot of laughing in there, only balanced out with the crippling anxiety that comes along with putting together that laughter.
It's a complete wash.
You get nothing out of this. Sal, seriously, Terrified is so good. Congratulations on this, man. All the work is noticed, and it's excellent. And, you know, seriously, it's been such a pleasure talking to you about it. I really do appreciate your time.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, man. It was so nice to talk to you. Appreciate it.
My thanks to Sal. Terrified is out now. Thanks to you, of course, for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button if you're not already so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out. 3 brand new ones a week. New one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcasts from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget to also give a rating, leave a review while you're at it. After that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where you'll find me every weeknight, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. In fact, you get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Nina Simone, The Beatles, XTC, The Last Dinner Party, Letters to Cleo, Elastica, Death Cab for Cutie, Pete Yorn, Dave Navarro, Toad the Wet Sprocket, Bruce Springsteen, Jason Isbell, Blitz and Trapper, Warren Zevon, Counting Crows, The Gaslight Anthem, Moby, Willow, Nine Inch Nails, L7, Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, and my interview with Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam, talking about their new record, Dark Matter. Just that's what you can hear every weeknights when you listen, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith, and I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Yes, we haven't spoken in the past, yeah?
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.